Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Lance Woods.
I had to put myself to the side and think about things outside of me because the thing that we're doing in Detroit is so much bigger than me. And that's why it's kind of blowing up. It's so much bigger than me. It's so much bigger than Joe. It's so much bigger than our team. It's not only inspiring people in Detroit, it's inspiring people around the world around health and wellness. And once I made that up in my mind that it's bigger than me, I decided to give myself to what we're doing.
On this episode of The Rundown, we talk running in a mindful way with elite marathoner, yoga instructor, and writer, Alex Dickinson. I had the pleasure of meeting Alex just after the California International Marathon last year and knew he'd be a great guest on the show. He's a very interesting guy who's found synergy between his two passions, yoga and running. He's also well-traveled and isn't scared to switch up his living situation from time to time, even if that means living in a van for a while. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by the annual Wings for Life World Run taking place on Sunday, May 8th. Run and walk for those who can't. The format is simple. Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com to sign up to race. Download the app on your mobile device, and on May 8th, when the race begins, run as far as you can until the virtual catcher car passes you by. 100% of the race fee is donated to spinal cord research. By registering, you're making a donation to support and help find a cure for millions around the world affected by spinal cord injuries. I've been a part of this race for the past 4 years, and it's by far one of the most unique formats. Here's how it works for listeners in Canada. On Sunday, May 8th at 7 a.m. Eastern, 4 a.m. Pacific, the race begins. You set your own course and distance, and then you go. 30 minutes after the start of the race, a virtual finish line starts on course, slowly picking up pace to try and catch you. The further and faster you run, the longer it takes to catch up to you. Whether you plan to run 5K, 42, or even pushing a stroller, you'll be competing against your friends and other runners across the world for a great cause. Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com or download the Wings for Life World Run app in the App Store or Google Play. Then sign up and register for Team Ben Squad. Set your target distance and be sure to turn on your GPS to track your race. When the finish line catches you, your race is over and it's time for brunch and to cheer on your friends. So grab a friend to race with you, plug the date in your calendar, and set your alarm. Good luck with your training and see you on May 8th. In this week's news, Montreal Race Weekend is quickly approaching. On April 23rd and 24th, there will be the Montreal Half Marathon. Here's how the weekend will look. On Sunday the 24th, it will be the Half Marathon. But if you're looking for something a little shorter, you can test yourself on the 1, 5, or 10 kilometer distances on Saturday the 23rd. Now you might be saying, it's too early in the season and I'm just not ready. Well, let me tell you, you're not alone. I personally think there's no better time to shake off the rust than in April. And as my coach would suggest, racing is always a good idea. Make sure to check the show notes for links to this event, special offerings, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. The nice thing about getting to race again at CIM last December was that we got a feel for the community again. We got to see some old friends and some new ones too. I was lucky enough to get connected to my next guest through a good friend and former guest, Sean Hamilton. This guest is quite special. He also raced with us at CIM, had a great day. He's into mindfulness and yoga and some things that, you know, maybe not all runners are in tune with. I can't wait to unpack that with him a little bit more and how it benefits his running and how it helps him just in everyday life. So I'd like to welcome to the show, and I'm really thrilled to have him on, Alex Dickinson.
Hey, Justin. So happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we were lucky. You know, Sean was there kind of, he kind of knows everybody and got to connect with you and even share a few beers post race, which is always fun, and kind of felt a bit normal again after a long 2+ years now. So,
yeah. I mean, that was, you know, back when things were feeling a bit more normal, and now they're like really starting to feel like they're almost back to normal. But you know, that was a great day. Everyone had that post-race glow, and I've stayed in close touch with Sean since then. And you know, I think all of us like meeting for the first time that day, being runners and having that shared experience, it was like, it felt like being with old friends, even though, you know, everyone was just meeting. It was cool.
Mm-hmm. And it almost, you know, coming back to racing too, I don't know if you had the opportunity to race, you know, much prior to that, but it almost seemed like it didn't matter what kind of day you had. It was just great to be out there again and great to connect and see the smiles, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'd raced twice before that, you know, the start of the pandemic. But I hadn't raced a marathon in a couple of years, really. And that was only my second marathon. So I first marathon like right before the pandemic. It was January of 2020 at Houston. And I felt like it went well, but this next one, it was like, I knew I had done a ton of work in the 2 years of the pandemic. And I felt like I was, you know, a much better athlete, but at the same time, you can't have any expectations after not racing a marathon for years. You just kind of show up and however it goes, you're going to have a good day because you're racing a marathon again, you know?
No, totally. Yeah. And it was like, just the vibe was great and weather was great. And like you said, you know, it's a bigger build than you get for any other race. Cause you know, if you did keep up running, it was just cause to stay in shape for your mental health, if in hopes that maybe one day the races will come back, and eventually they did, like we saw. So yeah, did it feel different for you too? Did you keep running during that time off? Like did the relationship with running change for you during that time over the last two plus years?
Yeah, it changed a bit, I think, in that, I actually sort of remember, and I think it gave me the time to sort of explore my relationship to running and figure out what I wanted that to be. And I've never had a 2 year long buildup for a race, and I hope I never have it again. But at the same time, I'm for the opportunity. I got back to high mileage during the pandemic and, was able to just run in different ways. And I went through a lot of life changes in the pandemic as well. So, you know, I was living at altitude for the first time and things like that, and, you know, figuring that out and eventually sort of benefiting from it a lot. But yeah, it was a full 2 years, a lot of miles for sure.
What brought you to living at altitude? I know you like to travel and explore. What brought you to that way of living?
Yeah, that question is like a thread that you pull that you keep on pulling, because it's really kind of a long story. I'll try not to make it too long, but before the pandemic, I was living in New York City. I'd moved out there in 2016 or 2017. Just to be closer to some friends and, you know, as sort of a career move to get out to New York and start freelancing again, and sort of building up my own business there. I'm a writer, you know, at my day job. And I loved running in New York. The community is amazing. I think it's a lot of pavement, but there's some underrated spots in New York too. I mean, I ran so many miles in Prospect Park, for example, and just I fell in love with it. And seeing the same people there every day was so cool. But about 3 years into living in New York, I was just ready for something different. You know, I grew up in a small town in Washington State and never really was a city kid. I've always preferred the outdoors and things like that. And so I had this kind of harebrained idea to just buy a van and move into that and still kind of be based in New York City. So in like September, October of 2019, I moved into a van, and what I would do was like go on a trip for a couple of weeks, and I would, you know, use it as kind of like a training camp or just exploring or whatever. And I would work remotely along the way. And then I would come back to the city for a few days and I would see my friends and we'd all go to dinner and I would see all my clients and present all the work I'd done in the last 2 or 3 weeks on the trip. And then, you know, take a shower at the gym, do my laundry, and then head out on the next trip. and one of those trips was to Paris. I left the van this time and went to Paris with another good friend of mine, David Perry. And we were going to race the Paris half marathon. I think it was on February 28th of 2020. And, you know, we got there, did the packet pickup, had the whole expo experience, and then got an email like later that night that it was canceled. It was the first international sporting event that was canceled. So we were in Europe finding out that the world was shutting down, and you know, he was going to go on to Italy where things were really bad. So he decided to cancel his next leg of the trip. And, you know, at this time, no one really knew what was going on. And I was scheduled to go to Spain, where it really wasn't as bad. So I, you know, I flew to Barcelona and then went to Girona and, spent some time cycling there and things like that. And then things did get really bad. And so I kind of was stuck in Europe. Eventually I made my way back to the States, to New York City. And I got in my van and I spent one night in the city in the van and realized that like van life in the pandemic really wasn't going to work. Just because all of the resources that I was relying on, like, you know, bathrooms and showers at the gym and a workspace at coffee shops or wherever, all of that had closed. So I was lucky enough to be able to quarantine with a friend. But my next trip that I had planned was to Jackson, Wyoming. And I figured, you know, I was headed to Jackson, Wyoming anyways, might as well find a kind of short-term lease to just kind of ride this thing out. And so I got out there and I think I had a 6 month lease, but I just absolutely fell in love with Wyoming and that land. And I just felt a real connection to it spiritually. And so I ended up staying for 2 years. And so that's what brought me to altitude. And I mean, that landscape and those mountains, it's the best running, I think. But you know, it's starting to get crowded. Hype it up too much.
Yeah, don't post too much about it on Instagram.
Find out.
Yeah, you'll have people knocking on your door. Or yeah.
Right.
That's crazy, man. So I mean, my initial thoughts were like, well, you know, you were already in the van before the pandemic, and I thought, you know, that'd be the best kind of situation. But I didn't think about, right, because you're already in isolation, basically.
Right.
But when you think about all the resources you need to, like the other things you need, like the showering and the Wi-Fi, you know, that could become problematic in these public spaces, right? So
a lot of people bought vans in the pandemic, and I was sort of sitting there like, oh man, like they're going to have a realization in a couple of weeks if they're trying to do this thing full time. But I think a lot of people really were like buying a van and having another home also. You know, there's a lot of people who were using camping trips and things like that. And I think in that context, it totally makes sense. Because, you know, when things were like really, really locked down, it was great to be able to, you know, when you go to the gas station, if you're in a van, you can just go inside and wash your hands in the sink, you know, like there's that, that's great. But, you know, it was really hard to be like working full time from the van and not having a Wi-Fi connection and then not having a shower and things like that. I mean, you could, if you're not working, you can like come and shower in the river and stuff like that. But I unfortunately, you know, couldn't afford to just take 2 years off work. So it is what it is.
Yeah. But that the work that you do allowed for that flexibility too, which was,
oh yeah,
which is also nice, you know,
oh,
to change.
Yeah. I can
locations.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. Yeah. That's kind of where I was headed. Like it's a good setup for that. And like you said, had you're renting and you had the van and it's like you do, it's one or the other. Right. And so it doesn't become overwhelming, I guess.
Yeah. You know, when I was in the situation where I had like got back from Europe, you know, in that flight home, there were like three other people on the plane. It was after the travel ban and things like that. And I got back to the van and I was like, what have I done? You know, like this isn't going to work. And I had this really kind of stressed out moment. And then like a week later, I realized that it was the perfect situation because, you know, if I had been in my apartment in New York, I would have been stuck in my apartment in New York. And there was a lot of freedom and flexibility that I had already that I had sort of built into my life. And I was so lucky to have that. And I feel for people who are in urban environments. I mean, I think you're based in Montreal, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a beautiful city, but you know, the things that make Montreal beautiful, it's like the cafes and wine bars and parks and things that all sort of, you know, in that time weren't open and available. And I think what life was pretty hard for folks who were in the city, but it was, you know, just interesting seeing that from a place that is much more rural. I was actually like 40 minutes out of Jackson. So I was in this really tiny town and, you know, hardly anyone around. So I could just run, not see anyone all day. I was socially distanced, you know, as soon as I stepped out my door.
Yeah. Which sounds ideal. Yeah. And I also consider myself pretty lucky because I got a job working in Nunavut, which is in northern Canada, in kind of like the Arctic, at a gold mine. So, you know, where things were locked down and stuff back home, I was able to get away for 2 weeks at a time on rotational work, and it felt somewhat normal. You know, I could go to the gym, I could, you know, socialize a little bit. Like, whereas here, you couldn't really do anything, so... Yeah, I get that 100%.
That's like the most Canadian thing I've ever heard. You went up to Nunavut and worked on a gold mine. Like, that's
amazing. I did not sleep in an igloo, for the record, okay?
I love that.
So what drew you to Wyoming? Like, was there anyone there? Was a training buddy something? Or it was just a place you wanted to go and discover?
It was more that I wanted to go and discover it. You know, There are a few people who I sort of look up to and respect that I knew, you know, live in Wyoming, and it, you know, it's people like Jimmy Chin and Yvonne Chouinard, the founder of Pet Lives There, had a connection to the place, and just seeing some of the things that have been posted and all of that, I was like, I got to get there, you know? So it was more like exploratory. And I wanted to find out if Jackson, Wyoming could be, you know, took some adjusting, and I spent more time on the treadmill than I'd like to admit and things like that. But it's an absolutely stunning place. And, you know, I grew up snowboarding, and skateboarding and things like that. And doing a bit of climbing and just other outdoor pursuits I'm still kind of into. And so I was able to connect with those again. I spent a lot of time snowboarding and hiking in the backcountry and stuff like that, which, you know, is so accessible in a place like that. So.
Yeah, so just playing like you were as a kid. It must seem like a playground to you.
Totally. People make fun of Jackson sometimes and say that it's just like adult Disneyland. And it kind of is. You can play a lot there, but it is, you know, a pretty hard landscape at the same time. So, in a way, it allows you to play, but it also kind of forces you to grow up at the same time. And that was really like, looking back at my time in Wyoming, I think that like, that's the time that I became, that I grew up. Like, I feel like I became an adult. I became a man, and I feel like I'm in a new phase or life, and maybe I'm a little late to the party because I'm 31 and I, technically became an adult 13 ago, but at the same time, I feel like I really stepped into, this sort of new phase of life in a way that feels very like grounded and just feels like I'm on the right path. And Wyoming allowed me to have the space and the stillness to come to that place and, explore and play a little bit along the way.
Right. So, I sense that you got, you have a really great connection to Wyoming and, but you also move around a lot, right? So how do you, when you have that much growth and appreciation for a place, why leave? Why would you move on from that? Is that something that you're used to going from one place to another, every few years? Or I'm always curious because, I've lived in Montreal my whole life. I love to travel and stuff, but, Montreal's home for me.
Right. Yeah. It's, my relationship to place and space has been shaped by a childhood where I was moving around a lot. I mean, I think, my family probably moved, like six or seven times before I was 18, and it was all within the same area, but, we sort of bounced from, like house to house on just, sort of east of Seattle, mostly around this town called Issaquah, which is now sort of a bigger town, but it used to be a small town. And that's been a weird change to witness happening. But, then, after sort of leaving home, it's always been necessity, or there's been sort of a pull to somewhere else. I'll say that, my family, my folks, we all lost our family home, in the global financial crisis. My parents, just had jobs that were really affected by that situation. My mom was a real estate agent and my dad worked in startups, and, they just sort of went through a really tough financial time in 2008. And, coming a senior year of high school, we moved out of our family home, and my mom went to live with her mom, and my brother and my sister went there. And my dad went to live with a cousin of his, and there really wasn't room for me at either place. So, I ended up living in my car for most of my senior year of high school. And I, at the time was telling my parents I was, staying at the other parent's house, or I was staying with friends. but it did give me this sort of interesting relationship to place and space and home, as I said, and I've always been able to pack up and leave and go to a new place if something came up that required me to be in a different place. So I ended up, getting a scholarship to go to University of Portland, was lucky enough to be able to go there. And so I moved to Portland. I lived there for eight years total, 4 years after graduating school. That's where I really deeply connected with running and, a community of runners and a community of runners who were much faster than me. Cause the cross country team there is incredible. And I was not an incredible runner and still am not an incredible runner. And then, like I said, I moved to New York and then Wyoming. And just recently, you know, within the last couple of weeks, really, I've moved to California. And this one is for a full-time job. It's the first full-time job that I've had in a long time. And I took it on last June. They're now bringing us out here. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say, you know, when you moved into the car, that's when you became a man.
You know, at the time I was pretty convinced. I'll tell you that. I'm not sure now looking back, but.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I mean, talk about resourceful, you know, and resilient, you know, that's for a kid can't be the easiest, you know. I guess it could be fun for a while, but
yeah,
it definitely has its challenges. But
yeah, there were challenges. It was a time of real growth for sure. And I was really lucky that it happened when it did. There's some interesting research actually that looks at how that the timing of, you know, events that could be considered like traumatic events in someone's life, how they affect, you know, that person's growth or are sort of, and you know, if it happens around that stage of life where you're really coming into your own and, you know, kind of becoming an adult and you're able to push through it and be resourceful, it can lead to, you know, post-traumatic growth, right? There, that's like the concept. And I was just really lucky in that, in the year or maybe 2 years prior to that, I had been finding a lot of independence. Anyways, I just started to explore yoga and running and being outside in nature. My relationship to snowboarding was even changing. Like I was looking at that as more of a like spiritual pursuit and connecting to the outdoors and spending time in the backcountry rather than like being a kid who was like trying to do tricks in the park, you know? And so I was really like becoming myself and spending not a lot of time at home anyways. And so when this happened, of course there were hard times and there were tough nights and things like that. But I was able to kind of frame it up as like this opportunity to dive deeper into the spiritual pursuits and run and things like that. You know, like one thing that's an example of that is I was sort of forced to run more consistently because if I ran in the mornings, like from school or near school, I would have an excuse to use the shower in the locker room before class started. So I would like go for a run and then go to the locker room and people would be like, oh, what are you doing here? And I'd be like, oh yeah, I just went for a run, just having a shower, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was ways that, you know, it was an adventure, but the little things that I had to do to make the adventure work were kind of fun for me and allowed me to really like decide who I wanted to be and be intentional. And like, it was a run before school and then I went and worked at this organic grocery store and then I went to a yoga class and that was my day, you know, pretty much every day. And it was just a really like, healthy, intentional, full style that I stepped into. And sometimes I miss that time cause it felt, so pure, you know?
Yeah. And way less responsibilities and, you know, you can kind of you're studying and doing the things that you love to do too. And yeah, I mean, and in the short period of time that we met you in California, you know, you shared some of these experiences and like, it's an interesting life, you know, it's not the typical life, that most, you know, kids have as an upbringing. So, I mean, these are unique experiences that change you in one way or another. And it sounds like it's had a positive impact on you in more ways than one. And
oh, thank you.
You know, it sounds like it created a lot of balance, you know?
Yeah. I learned a lot from it. It definitely has made me a more like patient humble person. And it's like you said, it's like interesting. It's always nice to have a story too, you know. I like stories a lot. I'm a writer, and hopefully one of these days I'll put pen to paper and it can write this one down. But you know, one thing that I always like am a little bit careful to mention is like, you know, I had that experience, but I'm still like a white guy. Like I still have a ton of privilege, and you know, I think a lot of people who have gone through like tough experiences like kind of shirk this idea of privilege. And even when I was like living in my car, like the experience that I always like think about when it comes to having privilege in a situation like that is like one night I parked in front of the yoga studio and went to sleep in the back of, you know, my Subaru Outback. And I was woken up in the middle of the night, like at 3 a.m, and there were two cops that were like shining lights inside the windows of the Subaru. And I don't know why I didn't crack the windows more or whatever, but the windows are just fogged up, and they like saw inside, and there were just kids sleeping in there. And, you know, they just said like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Well, I'm sorry. You know, I got into a fight with my mom, and I'm sleeping in the car. I'll be back home tomorrow," you know, and made up this little story. But it's like, if I was any other person, like that situation could have gone much differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, or if I was a woman, like they're just, I still in that situation had so much privilege that they just gave me the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, cops don't always do that. And they just said, "All right, you know, go back to sleep, on your way." And so, you know, I just want to like give that caveat that like a lot of people hear these things about tough experiences and they're like, "Oh yeah, you don't have privilege," or, you know, they think that they don't have it because of the hard things that they went through, but that's just not how it works. So.
Yeah. Somebody else in that position, the outcome could have been much different, and they live that every day, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things. I mean, we can view a lot of things that way, you know, the sleeping in the car in a parking lot, or, you know, just walking down the street. I think
totally
it's I got friends that say, you know, "Do you know, have any idea how many times I get pulled over
right
for nothing, like driving my car?" It's like, okay, like never. It's not something I think about, you know. And yeah, it's good to be mindful and reflect on that privilege that we have, and that it's not so easy for others, you know.
Yeah,
who might have been in this similar situation. Yeah,
totally. The other little piece to it is that, you know, I found out I had a scholarship, pretty much a full ride scholarship to go to school, like an academic scholarship, and so there was a light at the end of the tunnel. Like I knew exactly when I was going to go have free room and board at a nice college that I had already visited, that I already liked. And so I knew this was a temporary thing, and that allowed it to be much easier. It was like, okay, I'm going on my spirit walk for a little while, but like at the end of the day, I'm going to have a, you know, fluffy bed and a hot meal. So that makes things
right.
Too, you know?
Yeah. I was going to ask where that, you know, how that scholarship came about. And yeah, I'm happy you mentioned that. I didn't know if it was through academics or through sport, or, you know, how that looked. So where did the connection to running come into play? I know you're into the snowboarding, and then, you know, and yoga, and also running, and you are a good runner. We have to say that. you don't give yourself enough credit, maybe, but I think it's a work in progress for a lot of us, you know.
Yeah.
And
so I lived a pretty like stereotypical childhood before that time. You know, my dad loved baseball and got me into baseball when I was really young. He also loved skiing and got me into skiing when, you know, I was on the mountain when I was like 3 years old. And so for me, skiing was always associated with just like the best times. It was because it was always vacations and times when we weren't thinking about school, and sometimes friends were brought along. And so I just like loved skiing and snowboarding from a really young age and associated being outdoors with positivity. And I'm so grateful for that upbringing, that experience. I think young people having experiences in nature is so important. On the other hand, I totally hated baseball. Like I hated it so much. And my dad would like sign me up and I'd be like, all right, I'll play another season of baseball. And then I would get two games in and I'd be like, I want to quit. And they, my parents were always like, well, you know, you signed up, you made a commitment, you got to play out the rest of the season. And I ended up quitting. And I guess I played baseball until I was in like eighth grade. So, you know, I was like 12 or 13. But I had started to play soccer as well. And really at that time, I love soccer. I love snowboarding and I love skateboarding. And so when I got into high school, you had to decide between baseball and soccer. I chose soccer, played until my junior year of high school. And then I just kind of lost the love for it. And I got more into snowboarding. As soon as I got a car, it was like, all right, I'm going up to the mountain after school. You get up to the mountain in like 25 minutes from where I live.
Mm.
I was there all the time. And one of my first jobs was like teaching lessons on the mountain. And, so I got more into that, and quit soccer. And then in my like junior year of high school, sort of after quitting soccer is when I started to get into running. So I came into running pretty late actually. And really the way that it started was, I was just becoming a hippie. Like I was just getting into being in nature and stuff like that. So I would hike this like little hill mountain in my hometown. And, I would do it like every day in the early morning. And then I just got fitter and I just started running up this mountain. And then I would kind of like meditate at the top and then I would run down. And I did that enough times to where I was like, oh, I think I'm like a runner now. And then, my mom was doing a half marathon and, she asked if I wanted to do it as well. Or I think actually she asked if I wanted to train with her first and I started training with her. And then she asked if I wanted to do the race and I went out and I ran, I think I ran like 120 something. I ended up getting second overall cause it was this really small race and it was sort of on trails and they like gave me this, this mug cause it was for Oktoberfest and we're like, you can fill this up with beer anywhere in town all day. And cause you got some, and I was like, well, I'm 17. Like, no, I can't. I remember I like gave it to my mom and she got a beer and my mom like hates beer. So she took one sip and it was just like worst prize ever, you know?
Thanks, son.
Yeah. And that was really when I started getting into yoga too. Like when I quit soccer and got done with like organized school sports, I was like, okay, I'm going all in on like the outdoor sports and the spiritual pursuits. And I walked into this little yoga studio on Front Street in Issaquah. It's not there anymore, sadly, but it was this great little studio. And, you know, 90% of the time I was the only guy in the class. And it was just a very different time for yoga. I mean, yoga was not looked at the same way that it is in the West now. It's just very different. But it was a pretty like traditional studio and I loved it. I mean, after the first class, I just felt like I was coming home And someone said that to me after class. It was the owner of the studio was like, "You look like you've been doing yoga for 17 years, you know?" And I was like, "I feel so good." I wasn't super flexible or anything like that. I just was in love with it from the start.
Yeah, I mean, that's super, it's very mature of you, you know, it's a mature thing to do. When I first got into yoga, and I don't practice as like at all anymore. But when I did get into it, it was a while ago now, but I was doing hot yoga and I absolutely loved it. The focus, the lack of distractions, the calmness, the peace, you know, that you get, and also, you know, exercising your body in ways that you normally wouldn't make time for, you know? What do you know what it was that drew you to that? And like, why did you have that spiritual awareness at that age?
I was a pretty stressed out kid, to be honest with you. And before this sort of personal revolution where I was like, all right, I'm going to start trail running and hiking backcountry with my snowboard and getting into yoga, I was like, I put a lot of pressure on myself. I dealt with a lot of anxiety and, I was really like motivated in school and in soccer and all those things. I put so much pressure on myself, and it was good because I, did well in school, you know, well enough to get a scholarship and things like that. And I learned discipline and all that, but I had no mechanism for releasing the pressure valve. And yoga just seemed like the best way to do that. I was just drawn to it. There was like a magnetism to that little studio with you know, wood floors and wood walls and mirrors. I was like, that looks cool. That looks real, you know? And, I had also taken a trip with my family to China. And we were there for a couple of months, and my mom had lived there when she was college aged. And we kind of explored like the entire country. We visited 12 different cities. And, I think this is really what like kicked all of this off for me. Was we would be in cities in China and, you know, these like real industrial hubs, and people were like falling asleep on trains and everyone was wearing the same like black suit, and people looked really like tired and pretty unhappy. And then we would get out into the countryside and, you know, you would see people who had a lot less, but were living these like pastoral rural lives. And obviously like there's poverty issues and things like that. But generally what we saw was that these people were, happier. They were more at peace. They, you know, were a little bit more in touch with their spiritual lives and things like that. And that was just so attractive to me. So while I was there, I just started looking into things like Buddhism, because it was all around us. And then that led to looking at yoga as well as, you know, sort of a way to get more of whatever they had. Cause I, you know, as a kid didn't feel any of that calm and peace and respite. And so when I got back, it was pretty immediate that I was like, okay, I think yoga is the thing for me. That's going to be the way that I explore this, you know?
Mm-hmm. When you know, most, you know, a lot of kids would you know, unfortunately, they fall into other things, you know, like, you know, partying, substance, these kind of things to deal with stresses and to, you know, this is the much healthier, more holistic way to deal with those things. But your exposure to that through travel allowed you to see it, you know, and I think you're making me reflect on that, you know, so much of what kids are exposed to are their surroundings, and that usually is, you know, where they're from, where they grew up. You know, it's not you know, a trip across the world to see things that they would otherwise never see, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, like, that trip was a total stroke of luck, right? And the other, like, strokes of luck were meeting a great crew of snowboarders who weren't into partying and things like that. Like, they just wanted to be outside and have a good time with their friends, and it was good, clean fun, right? And that's not always the case with skateboarders and snowboarders. And so that was lucky, and that was my crew, and none of them went to my high school, so I didn't have to try and be a cool kid. I could just kind of go snowboarding with my best friends after school and on the weekends, and then come to school and be a goofball and be the guy who went to yoga and stuff like that. I was pretty freed up, which was great. But it that's a really good point that you make, and it worries me, you know, watching shows like Euphoria and like just thinking what is going on with the youth these days. Like, they're in a much more challenging position, and I really feel for them. So, you know, I hope that, like, they're are ways for, you know, I know there are ways for kids to find things like this, but for kids to, like, find meaning in things that aren't so material and at the same time, like, immaterial, like, just, you know, living these, like, lives on completely on technology, you know, that is something that I didn't really have to contend with, because I didn't even have a cell phone when I was 17, and it would have been a much more challenging situation, you know, if I did.
Yeah, which, and I see that as a blessing, you know, like, when we grew up, you know, similarly, I got a phone late, you know, I mean, I got one 19 or something like that, but I'm so grateful that, you know, I come home from school and, you know, first thing I do is go play outside, you know, right. And you see kids now, and it's almost like a distraction for them, so they stay quiet at a restaurant, you know, and they're not
right.
They're not experiencing a whole lot other than what they see in front of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important, like, to be mindful.
You know, I don't have kids, and what's that?
Oh, I was just saying, like, as you know, being a kid, like, it's probably hard to be, but you just have to be so mindful about the way that you use the technology that's available, you know.
Absolutely, for sure. So do you see, like, this like a synergy with every, like, all the things that you're doing with, like, your creative side, the yoga side and the running? Do you see, like, how these things flow and move together, you know, no pun intended with the flow, but
Yeah, nice one. yeah, absolutely. I mean, these things have always been, like, interwoven for me, because I just, you know, I discovered all of it at the same time, right? And it kind of set me on this path. And there's been a lot of work that's been done with regard to, like, mindful sport or mindful exercise. And, you know, all respect to people who have been doing that work. One thing is, like, I think the jury is still out on whether or not running itself can be a form of yoga. Mike Spino in his book, says, running can be a yoga. And I think that maybe there's, like, another way of looking at it, which is, like, in the West, we think about yoga as, like, going to this class and getting some exercise and jumping through some postures and stuff like that. And that's all well and good, but it really should be kind of a gateway to bigger things. And, you know, yoga really is, like, a system or a philosophy for living. And if you decide to walk that path, it's bigger than that, and it's more spiritual, and, it should inform the way that you live your entire life. Like, it doesn't end at the mat. So to me, I like to think about it as, like, when I'm going on the run, like, I'm still embodying this life or lifestyle of a yogi. And so, like, you should be mindful of your breathing and your body and your space, and you should run peacefully, right? Like, you shouldn't be cutting people off and thrashing through the forest and things like that. And so it's less of like trying to make running a yoga. It's more like running as a yogi runs. And I think that has informed my approach to running. And I've sort of been working on this like system for mindful running and doing some writing, and I hope to be able to share that soon. But all of it is totally interwoven. Like, my practice doesn't end on the mat, and my physicality is totally wound up in my creativity. Like, I would not be the writer or creative that I am if I didn't run almost every morning, right? And it's just because running puts my brain in an elevator, and then I come sit down and, you know, I'm much better at the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. That's so great, man. It's I've been thinking about this idea of, you know, there's so much. Running is such a primal thing, you know. It's something that we've been doing for thousands and thousands of years, you know, as humans. And there's so much wrapped into, you know, like we're saying with apps and the watch and the pace and the, but we're losing the feel for running.
Yeah.
You know, and this is something I think, and something I love about my coach is that a lot of the language in my training, even if it's a workout, is all feel words. It's like,
I love that,
you know, run this much at, you know, cruise or hard or easy,
yeah.
Or it's not around numbers. So, and I feel bad because like I've realized this for a long time, and I love it. Like, I love that way of thinking and going out and really like feeling my run. And I don't get discouraged by my paces or anything like that. I just go and do the work.
Yeah.
But we fall in, like, so many runners or new runners fall into that trap of, oh geez, like that kilometer wasn't that fast, or, you know, I didn't do as well today, without looking at the big picture, you know?
Absolutely. I think that's so great. I think that like running is an inherently beautiful thing, right? Like, running is a beautiful thing. It's beautiful to run. And sometimes we run in a way where we force it and we make it not a beautiful thing. And if we just get out of our own way, get out of our own heads about what it should be, and like you said, like, run on feel. If it's cruise, you're cruising, but you have to feel the ground. You have to feel the air that you're moving through, and run in a way that is natural and, like you said, primal. And then you get out of your way enough to where running can be the beautiful thing that it's meant to be. I've spent this past year training a bit more for triathlon. I raced my first triathlon last September. And, you know, the way that people talk about swimming is so different from the way that people talk about running. It's much softer. It's like, I mean, quite literally, you're not stomping on the ground, right? But at the same time, there's this idea of, you've got to feel the water to be able to move through this substance that you can pull against it, but you have to slice through it at the same time. And it's much more about connecting to this material in space in a way that makes you part of it. I mean, you're quite literally in the water, but I think running is kind of the same way. Like, you're in air, you're on the ground, you're in space. And if you look at running in that same way, where you have to, just in your mechanics, like, figure out a way to naturally move with all of those substances and work with all those substances, it does take the pressure off, and it allows you to just like enjoy the experience of doing it.
Yeah, no, totally. And yeah, it's really that, you know, it's allowing the body to feel the work and feel the run or the swim or whatever the activity is. And that's how we grow as athletes. You know, it's not the time at which we're running, but just the, you know, it's come, always comes back to the consistency and not adding those extra pressures or stresses so that, you know, it's hard enough on the body as it is, let alone, you know, and it's supposed to be a release for the mind, you know?
Right. Right. And obviously like there's days when it's going to feel hard and that's okay. That's part of running. Like I'm running high mileage right now. Not every mile feels easy, but at the same time, I move as naturally as possible. Mm-hmm. And if I'm running too fast for myself, I know it pretty quickly. And that's when you have to, you do have to really be mindful of like the intensity at which you should be running. Cause if you're going past that, like you're not giving your body right stimulus to actually improve. And, that doesn't mean that it's always going to feel easy, but at the same time, you should look for it to feel rather natural. And that's part of yoga too. It's like, you can experience a lot of discomfort in a lot of postures, right? A lot of asana. The goal is to find comfort in the discomfort, and breathe easy and move naturally. And all those things can be applied. All those lessons can be applied to running as well. And I think it makes you a better runner.
Mm. I think you're reigniting my desire to start yoga again. So hopefully it's having the same effect on people listening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like a perfect time. I mean, I'm seeing now that here where I am, it's like everyone's celebrating getting back to the studio. So I'm excited to, you know, at some point, whenever it feels safe, you know, to be able to practice with people around and feel that prana, that breath from everyone in the room. And, cause that's a really special thing that I think a lot of people have missed a lot in the past 2 years. It's just moving, you know, with other people.
Absolutely. Well, how did the triathlon stuff come about? I know we don't have much time left, but, I did see, you just made me think of the photo where you were, getting ready to pass Tom Brady out of the water. So.
No. That funny story. That's actually not Tom Brady. That's he just looks like Tom Brady. I was like going through my race and found this photo of me getting out of the water. Guy who looks exactly like Tom Brady.
You fooled me.
Sorry for that. Sometimes I can be a bit deadpan right. With the sarcasm, but you know, the triathlon thing, not to take it too far back, but one of the other things that I got into sort of in like very late in high school and a little bit in college, and then much more like right after college, right after I got out of school, I was pretty burnt out on running. I had tried to sort of catch up to all the runners at University of Portland by just running super high mileage, and I really burned myself out and ended up with like, you know, low testosterone and low iron and all these things that I just should have been much smarter about. But I took like a year off from endurance sport and just kind of healed and did more yoga and things like that. And then before getting back into running, I met a group of like local cyclists in Portland, and I just started riding a lot with them and loved it. And it was like, okay, I get my, you know, endurance sport, my movement, but it's different than running. So I'm still kind of allowing my body to recover and doing something different. And I raced bikes for a little bit, and it went well. And then when I started working more, I kind of let the dream of being a pro cyclist, you know, go to the wayside. And at that point, you know, got back into running, but it was more in balance with like my work and the rest of my life. And so when I was living in New York, I saw some old like film and I was like, whoa, this sport is cool. Like that vintage triathlon stuff looks so rad. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do one of those. My friend had done an Ironman, and so I signed up for a 70.3, a half Ironman, and that got canceled in the pandemic. But there in 2021, you know, things were looking better, so I signed up for one in Muncie, Indiana, which is a small town. I don't really know why my friend chose Muncie, Indiana. But I trained for that. And it was a nice way to like get really fit without quite as much running mileage. And you know, taking some of the load off the body. But it ended up going really well. I felt great on the bike. On the swim, I swallowed about half the lake, you know, because I'm not a great swimmer, but, which led to some fueling difficulties late stages of the race. But I was able to push through that, and I ended up getting seventh overall at that race, and I qualified for the World Championships in St. George, Utah, as what's called an age grouper in triathlon. And so that means I'm not racing in the pro field, but I am going to go to World Champs in October. So I'm really excited actually to give that a bit more of a shot.
That's sick. Love that. That's amazing. Yeah. I dabbled in the triathlon stuff too, back in, well, it must be 5-6 years ago now, but I dabbled in it a little bit and got into the hype of that and wanted to make the World Championships in Kona one day, but kind of put it on the back burner to try and become a better runner. So we'll have to wait and see, but maybe that'll start up again soon, I hope.
Yeah, we'll get you to Kona.
Oh, I'd love that. I mean, my mentors are, they've been there. They've done the Ultraman 5 times as a couple, and wow, they're special people. So yeah. They inspired me to go visit the Grand Canyon recently too. So got to do that.
That's awesome.
But certainly the triathlon's in the back of my mind for sure.
We'll both get into Kona. We'll go to on the same year.
That'd be sick. That'd be so sick for sure. So what has running taught you?
Running really, I think, is so woven into my identity at this point. That it really just has made me who I am. I mean, there's the simple fact that I go out almost every morning, and then by the time I get home and start my day, I'm just a better person, right? Like I've had more blood flow to my brain. I feel more awake and I feel more resolved to just be better, and treat people better and all those good things. But, there's sort of three, I think, key lessons. And they're sort of in order. I think the first one is that life is a whole lot more interesting when you set out to do something and the answer to the question of whether or not you can is, I don't know. Like if you set a goal for yourself and someone says, oh, are you going to be able to do that? And you say, I don't know, but I'm still going to go for it. Like life gets a whole lot more interesting and fun. And so setting those goals for myself in running has just given me like a more fulfilled, I think, meaningful life. And I'm so grateful for that. I think the more advanced version of that, is like realizing that the joy comes from living the life that allows you to get to those things or to work towards those things that you don't know are possible. So realizing that the sort of simple, disciplined life that gets you there is the thing that you take fulfillment from. And then you can remove the goal and say, oh, I can just stay on this path and that makes me happy and gives me this fulfilled life. And then I think the most advanced version is just the sort of realization that like we don't take fulfillment or get as much joy from the material things, like the results of the races or buying the new pair of shoes, that we do from the sort of more spiritual and immaterial things, like having a belief that you can go after these things, and faith in yourself, and a connection to nature, and all of that gives you sort of a more beautiful life. So you can let go of the goals altogether if you really need to.
Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of people need to hear, for sure. You know, do stuff because you want to do it. Don't do it because there's something circled on your calendar or making that the reason. You know, it's got to be greater than that, you know, because at the end of it, that's what do you have, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've still got those numbers written on my calendar for sure. But at the same time, I can't wait to be an old man who just goes out the door and runs a couple miles every morning and gets some life. You know, I can't wait for those days.
Absolutely. And what does running mean to you, Alex?
Maybe this is the place where running and yoga really do cross over. Yoga, I mean, the root of the word is just, it means connection. And I think to me, running is sort of the same way. It's connection to the moment that you're in, the place that you're in, the people you're running with, the universe around you. I think that's what it means to me. And maybe that's evolutionary, right? Like, we're sort of designed for running, and it's written into our DNA. And so maybe when you're doing it, you just feel like you're in sync with the universe and what you're supposed to be doing. And that's what it feels like to me.
Very good. I love that. Did you end up finding that bib for Boston?
Working on it, my friend. Got a couple good leads, but we'll see. Yeah, I'm training like I've got it, so I hope so.
Where can people find out more about you, Alex?
At the moment, just Instagram. It's Alex Dickinson, AlexDickinson, Dickinson like the poet. Yeah, I've got my website shut down and all that kind of stuff because I'm working full time. But Instagram is the way.
Amazing. Well, I think this conversation could have easily gone another hour and a half. I really appreciate you taking the time today to sit down with me and continue our conversations from Cali a few months back. But I wish you all the best, and I hope you get that bib for Boston, so you could put that training to good use, and good luck on the West Coast. That's an exciting move for you.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry that we had a time limit, but I enjoyed it so much, and I really appreciate you letting me, you're off. So
amazing. Yeah, well, it was great. Thanks so much, and take care.
Thanks so much, my friend. See ya.
This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by the annual Wings for Life World Run, taking place on Sunday, May 8th. Run and walk for those who can't. The format is simple. Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com to sign up to race. Download the app on your mobile device, and on May 8th, when the race begins, run as far as you can until the virtual catcher car passes you by. 100% of the race fee is donated to spinal cord research. By registering, you're making a donation to support and help find a cure for millions around the world affected by spinal cord injuries. I've been a part of this race for the past 4 years, and it's by far one of the most unique formats. Here's how it works for listeners in Canada. On Sunday, May 8th at 7 a.m. Eastern, 4 a.m. Pacific, the race begins. You set your own course and distance, and then you go. 30 minutes after the start of the race, a virtual finish line starts on course, slowly picking up pace to try and catch you. The further and faster you run, the longer it takes to catch up to you. Whether you plan to run 5K, 42, or even pushing a stroller, you'll be competing against your friends and other runners across the world for a great cause. Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com or download the Wings for Life World Run app in the App Store or Google Play. Then sign up and register for Team Ben Squad. Set your target distance and be sure to turn on your GPS to track your race. When the finish line catches you, your race is over and it's time for brunch and to cheer on your friends. So grab a friend to race with you, plug the date in your calendar, and set your alarm. Good luck with your training and see you on May 8th. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.